Okay, agenda's in RSC. On the agenda today, we have Peter's comments that he wrote in. Thank you, Peter, for putting down some concrete proposals for spec text changes. We have the blank node identifiers for data types issue and the JSON LD URL dereference or option issue for the API. And then if we get through those three, we should discuss candidate rec prep and figure out what our timeline is to go to candidate rec. Okay, any updates or changes to the agenda? Okay, first up are Peter's comments. Peter, if you wouldn't mind giving a quick overview of what you're trying to accomplish with all of the changes here that you're proposing, as just a general overview, and then we can go in into each one of those changes in a little more detail.
So there's two halves to that message. One half is a very toned down version of the JSON LD feedback from Greg Reynolds. And if you read the feedback from Greg Reynolds, I agree entirely with his comments. And after reading jsonld-org, I agree even more. And in some sense, you shouldn't be hearing what I'm really thinking. Let me say something. I think the one thing that's actionable is, there has been a lot of discussion on the RDF working group from the JSON LD people about we can't roughly, and this is somewhat pejorative, but not very roughly, we can't offend the tender sensibilities of JSON LD developers by mentioning RDF in the JSON LD specifications. Okay. That's bogus. It's worse than bogus. There's a whole JSON LD web page. JSON LD developers can read that web page. They can do whatever they want with that web page. The JSON LD, the tender sensibilities of JSON LD developers will be not bruised in any way, shape, form, or anything by doing the right thing in the JSON LD W3C specs from the RDF working group. That's one side of the comment.
Okay.
The other side of the comments is JSON LD is supposedly a WC3 rec from the RDF working group, and it is not related to anything else from W3C. And that's not appropriate. And so my modest suggestion, and truly modest in this case, is to firm up the relationship between JSON LD and the rest of the W3C World Wide Web, Semantic Web, and linked document, whatever it is, LD specifications. I mean, not that there really are any LD specs, but you get the idea, is to firmly place JSON LD on top of RDF. And that is done by changing Appendix A and fiddling a tiny bit, perhaps, with Appendix C. And as far as I can tell, there will be no required changes to the other JSON LD document, although I'm not completely sure of that. Even so, okay, suppose that those changes are made. Even so, we're still in an unhappy situation as far as I'm concerned, but I am, I suppose, willing to hold my nose.
Okay. Any feedback from the rest of the group on the general comments before we go into each one of these statements?
I basically agree on the intent.
I've also been supported a lot of what Peter wants to do. I'm looking for a little bit of balance towards the I think, the direction that we had been taking, which tried to, in the very beginning, anyway, de-emphasize RDF, but not for all practical purposes change any different meaning, but simply not push that forward. But that's, from my perspective, that is mostly a consensus. That's in an effort to try to reach consensus among people that have different views. My own views are that I don't feel that using RDF more explicitly early on is really going to push people away in the long run.
Okay, so let me figure out how to phrase this. There's quite a bit of history behind JSON-LD. Peter, this is mostly directed at you, because I think that you have been out of the many, many, many discussions we've had about the approach that we're taking with JSON-LD, and I don't think you're privy to a lot of the discussion about where JSON-LD came from and where it kind of fits in with the whole ecosystem. So in the very beginning with JSON-LD, what we set out to do was create a data exchange format that was compatible with RDF. So the core of what we were trying to do was create a markup syntax that was very easy for web developers to use, that just so happened to be able to go to RDF and come back from RDF. So we wanted round-trip ability, but RDF was very much one of those, oh yes, it can do this too things, right? So that's where JSON-LD started, and I think that you can still see a lot of that in the spec. Now, the reason that we did that, and I mean a subset of the people in this group. I think over time we have added people that, especially when we ended up joining the RDF working group, we ended up adding people that felt that RDF needed to be kind of the central pillar of JSON-LD.
Just hold on here a second. That's what you said a few sentences ago, didn't you?
Said, well, what do you mean? Let me clarify. So
okay,
there's a nuance
now,
there.
Now, okay. Now here's an interjection. That nuance did not come over to the RDF working group, as far as I remember.
What do you mean?
That RDF was not a central pillar to JSON-LD from the beginning.
It never was. It was clearly in the spec. And we discussed this with David Wood. I'm afraid that you're interpreting that statement more strongly than it is intended. What I'm trying to convey is that we always wanted compatibility with RDF, right? And it was outlined in the spec, and we wanted to keep it loose, fairly loose, how that compatibility was accomplished. Because what we wanted to be able to do is provide a tool that worked both for the web development community and for the semantic RDF communities. The problem is that those two communities have very different ideas on what constitutes a easy-to-use technology. So folks from the RDF, semantic web, more traditional academic camp, feel that there's not really all that much wrong with RDF, and it's perfectly usable, and people should just know the full data model and all that stuff. It's easy. It's easy to understand RDF. The web developer camp, and these are the HTML5, WebWG, you know, people that don't do semantic web stuff as a core part of their day-to-day, you know, job, those folks feel that, and again, this is a general broad brush statement, those people feel that RDF is overly complicated. They conflate it with RDF XML. Even the ones that don't conflate it with RDF XML understand that it is a very steep learning curve, because the second that you start touching concepts like RDF graphs and RDF data sets, you start touching things like, you know, blank nodes and reification and OWL, and it's really hard to kind of sort out what's important and what's not, what applies to the application you're working on and what doesn't. So JSON-LD is trying to find a balance between these two communities, and it is...
Okay, so let me push back on that. Okay, so Dave Reynolds has, I think, said it directly. And I... Is it... Oh, wait a minute. Who's... What page that I was just looking at? Greg Reynolds, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I can see, JSON-LD is pushing RDF under the bus.
I think that's hyperbolic.
I don't think so.
Then we're going to disagree very strongly. Saying that anyone here is trying to push anything else under the bus is hyperbolic. I would much rather... We are both trying to accomplish the same thing, right? And anything that...
I don't think so. Look at jsonld.org, your shiny new car in the showcase. Where is RDF?
The question is why do we need to talk about RDF on that page? What benefit does it give a web developer to put the letters RDF on that page? How does it help them accomplish their job?
That's the question. Okay, so you believe so that's what I'm saying. Okay. I mean, I think I've just proved my case.
Well, if you have, I don't get it.
That essentially the whole idea behind JSON-LD is to not be RDF.
No.
Well, then again, where's the RDF?
In the to RDF and from RDF algorithm?
Look at your shiny new car in the showcase.
Maybe someone else can jump in.
I think you might look at something like schema.org, which is, I think, firmly based upon RDF, yet does not really say anything about RDF either. It doesn't really need to.
Schema.org has okay. So there's a. I don't. First of all, I don't think of schema.org as essentially necessarily based on RDF because they don't talk about it. And secondly, they're not trying to be a WCC rec out of the RDF working group. And so I think the cases are very different. And if
well, I think it's perfectly fair to say that a specification coming from the RDF working group should be closely related to all of the other core RDF documents. And I believe
you're completely off the rails. That's a ridiculous statement.
Wait, I'm sorry. Did you hear me correctly?
I heard you closely related. That's ridiculous. A specification coming out of W3C that's related to that should be based upon other W3C recommendations, not closely related to.
Fine. And I believe that it should be based upon RDF concepts in specifically. Well, when I meant closely related, I meant that the specifications should tie themselves together so that we all form one consistent whole. And I believe that the JSON-LD specification accomplishes that. It just does it by de-emphasizing that close relationship at the beginning of the document. But I think when you get down deeper into it, it's all there. That's the intention that I've been going at this with.
First of all, I don't see the technical connection. And as far as I can tell from the document, the JSON-LD community has gone out of its way to not reference anything from W3C. And I'm not just saying RDF. I'm saying that the JSON-LD documenting community have gone out of their way not to mention anything from W3C.
If you look at the informative and normative references at the very bottom of the spec,
that's an empirical claim. Can we just look at the spec and see if the spec actually references anything from W3C?
I didn't say spec there. I said community.
Okay. Well, we need to stay on point then. I think your comments were related to feedback on the specifications, and that is the output of this document. JSON-LD.org is not a W3C site, and it does not. I don't think it has to to hit the same standard of relationship that the specification does.
Oh, okay. I'll agree with you 100% on that one. Okay. But then we've got to take the tender sensibility of JSON LD developers out of the equation, because the W3C specs don't have to pander to those tender sensibilities one iota.
I don't know how to translate in that in the spec text, Peter.
Okay, translate that into spec text says that the JSON LD specs should be referencing other W3C documents and the other RDF specs prominently and often, and they should make crystal clear at the very, very beginning the relationship between JSON LD and W3C linked data and RDF.
Yeah, but, I mean, the references
are
there.
No, that's not what I said. I said from the very beginning. The references are there. They are buried. They are incredibly hard to find out. In those two documents, they are incredibly hard to find out. They have been denigrated. They've been downplayed. They've been de-emphasized. They've been de-everything.
Oh, I don't think that putting references in a normative introduction is a hard requirement anywhere.
I'm not saying that you have to have normative statements in the introduction, but there was no mention of RDF in the introduction, or actually in maybe one reference in one place until you got to the very end of the document. There was no pointer to any notion of where linked data came from. There was no notion, no tying to any of the initial genesis of linked data, nothing along those lines whatsoever.
So this is in the introduction right now. It says, developers that require any of the facilities listed above or need to serialize RDF graph or RDF dataset, and then we have a link to RDF concepts in JSON-based syntax, will find JSON LD of interest.
Yes, and that's wholly inadequate. And it was
in the next section, we have software developers who want to generate or consume linked data, an RDF graph or an RDF dataset in a JSON syntax, basically, we'll find this document useful. In the next section, we have usable as RDF. We have JSON LD was designed to be able to be used by RDF. JSON LD was designed to be usable by developers as idiomatic JSON. No need to understand RDF concepts. However, JSON LD was also designed to be useful as RDF, so people intending to use JSON LD with RDF tools will find it useful. Yada yada yada. Reference to Appendix C.
We mention it
in every in the introduction, sections one and sections two. It's in the beginning.
Right. And every case that you do mention it, you push it under the bus. Every single case that it's mentioned, it's listed as, oh, by the way, you might also want to. Every single case. There's no notion in that document that JSON LD is designed as a way of writing down RDF graphs for people who may not want to understand all of the possible intricacies of RDF.
I believe that you're making empirical claims when you say that there is no mention that JSON LD is designed to work the way that you're saying. We can just cut and paste text directly from the spec. And here's some text right here that says JSON LD was designed to be usable as RDF. So that your claim that there is no mention is just empirically false.
Maybe you would like the language to be different. You're twisting my words around again.
Okay, well let's get your
words
very clear and then
there's no notion that JSON LD is based upon RDF. It's possible, again, it's possible to use JSON LD as RDF if you would happen to want to. There's no notion of how close the relationship is. And you know, it's just like in every place that RDF is mentioned, the connection between JSON, RLD, and RDF is played down as incidental and not central.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a fair criticism. And what we have tried to do is show them as being sort of parallel document or parallel representations that can be closely related or even transformed into each other. But I think my understanding of where you're coming from, Peter, is that RDF forms a sort of an intellectual basis. The concepts form an intellectual basis that are extremely well thought out over quite a bit of time. And if we don't claim that as our sort of intellectual heritage, that we risk being taken as a less serious, less well thought out format.
No, I'm not claiming that. Actually, I'm not making any claim yet as to the effects. But I mean, so I think that what you should do is take Greg Reynolds' comments. I mean, that's the danger to you guys, that Greg Reynolds' comments will prevail. And I think that's essentially, I mean, to put it in pragmatic terms for you guys, right, that the danger to you, okay, and this has nothing to do with any of my own interest or anything, the danger to you is that Greg Reynolds' comments sentiments will prevail.
Could you be specific about which sentiment in there?
And do we have a reference to his comments that we could put in, like, minutes?
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
RDF comments track, I suppose.
Yeah, I got to via your mailing list. He put a back pointer in your mailing list. So it's public RDF comments, June
150. Are you on it? In which he points to the RDF comments here.
And actually his comment is, has thrown the RDF files under the bus as opposed to RDF. And he's
I think a lot of his confusion actually might be related to the fact that the mapping to RDF is in a separate document.
I don't think so. And reading his, I read his message for the first time today, and it's really about impressions of the document, perhaps one could follow all the links through and come up with the relationship between JSON, LD, and RDF. But again, they're quite well hidden.
Okay, if there are no other comments on this, I think we should just go to the concrete proposals, because I think that's the only way that we're really going to...
I think that'll be more helpful, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Peter, would you like to take us through the concrete comments that you've put forward?
So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the only thing that's worthwhile talking about is the proposal for Appendix A. And I wish I... Where is my message? It should be here somewhere. Oh, that's the wrong
thing. I think I have. Well, let's see. No, I don't.
Let's see. There we go. I can find it here. No, wait a minute. It's on. Oh, no, it's not there. It's Public RDF Working Group. There. Okay, so the Public RDF Working Group, and then we need to find it.
I think Greg might have found them. No, that's, no. Sorry, that was the Greg Reynolds thing.
Is it that one?
It says comments on JSON LD, but okay, I can follow the back pointers.
This is it. It's in IRC. Peter Nicholas found it. It's the last link in IRC.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, yeah. It is from June. Oh, well, why didn't I find it? Okay. Oops. Oh, no, that's not it. Okay, let me get your IRC. I'm sorry, I'm in a... My company doesn't let IRC come into the building, and so therefore I have to do this weird, crappy thing. Okay, all right. All right. So the technical meat of this proposal is to change Appendix A, the data model, to start out saying JSON LD is a serialization for linked data, point to the silly genesis of linked data, and then talk about the difference between syntax of JSON LD and the data model, and to say bluntly that the data model, and so I'm editing slightly based upon what might happen, to say that the data model of JSON LD is RDF dataset, as defined by RDF, 1.1 RDF context. And there's, okay, and then to go beyond, and period, except that you need a few minor quibbles. And you have to talk about JSON LD data values, okay, and sort of come up with a story of how they relate to RDF data values. And then you have to come up with, and then the other point of contention is lists. And all you need to, and what you need to say is that a list in a JSON LD document translates into an RDF list. And that's it, except to the last bit, which essentially says that if stuff is in a JSON LD document that doesn't translate into an RDF dataset, then its only meaning is to mediate the translation into an RDF dataset. And that last bit, of course, is directly taken from what was there before.
Hold on, I didn't quite understand that. What do you mean by mediate? Go ahead.
So there was a paragraph in, there's a paragraph in the current document which essentially says, JSON LD documents may contain stuff that doesn't get turned into the JSON LD data model. Those things can be ignored. And that's not quite correct. They can't be ignored because a lot of them end up affecting the generation of the graph that underlies a JSON LD document. Right. So these are all these at type, these at base, all these things, right? They really have meaning. It's just that their meaning is to mediate, and you can use whatever wording you want. I think that the wording that was there is inadequate, but essentially their meaning is to mediate the formation of the underlying graph.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there may be other, and I'm not quite sure how you could get things that don't fit into this, but perhaps you can. And essentially, it's the same disclaimer now as there was before.
Yeah, so I think, sorry, I was going to just make a general statement.
Go ahead.
That would be fine with me. I think there's some details that need to be worked out, but I don't think that's it's not against the I don't think it's against the intent of this group. I mean, if someone disagrees with that, please feel free to correct me. But I mean, it seems fine. There are a couple of side effects that'll come as a result of making that change. One of them is that if we reference RDF1.1 concepts normatively, we are going to be held up by RDF1.1 concepts. So we are at Candidate Rec, and we're just going to have to wait until RDF1.1 concepts is done, and that could be 8 months from now. I don't know what the timeline for it is, but it's been dragging on for quite some time.
RDF1.1 concepts can't wait for 8 months. There's a deadline.
Well, the end of the working group, right?
Yeah, which so first of all, you're about to go into a second last call, so you're not at candidate rec, correct?
No, we're going to go into candidate rec.
What happened to your second last call?
Oh, it's already done. We finished the second last call. That was done 3 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. You can go in. Yeah. So this will slow you. That's true. Anyway.
Right. So that may not be a major issue, but I'm just raising it as a potential problem.
Again, I apologize for being asleep for so long.
That's fine. David Booth, you're on the queue. Yeah, I was just curious. So just to clarify, so Peter, are you suggesting that the parallel, I mean, at the moment, there's kind of this parallel JSON LD data model defined, and then the RDF data model that corresponds. Are you suggesting removing that parallel JSON LD model, or is what you're suggesting more about kind of positioning of how it's described?
So
how JSON LD data model is described.
Okay. I am suggesting removing that parallel model.
Okay. Yep. I would be happier with that as well. Just to mention that, I had sort of resigned myself to assuming that would be too much work for the group to do. So I had not been pushing for it, but I would be happier with that as well. Yeah, just to be clear, it is a lot of work for the group to do because we have to go back through, we have to sweep through both documents and make sure that everything lines up after we make that change, and it could be easily a month worth of work. The other concern that I have is that we put that section in at the request of the RDF working group. So now if we change that section, we have to go back to the people that requested that the section be put in and see if this new change aligns with them. And if it doesn't, we're going to be thrown into another just back and forth about what the data model, you know, should be. It's a big change at the, it's questionable on whether or not it's an editorial or a substantive change. You can argue it both ways, but it's a fairly large change as far as spec writing is concerned, because we have to make sure that everything lines up. Dave Longley, you're on the queue. I might have something to say after that.
Right. Wouldn't it just be sufficient to say that the JSON LD model data model is based upon the RDF data model? It seems like that was the major complaint. And I would have no problem with doing that. I think removing the name JSON LD data model, I don't think really accomplishes very much. If somebody wanted to be able to describe the differences or the RDF data model with the changes that have been made in JSON LD to support blank nodes and predicate positions, you'd want to have a name to give it anyway, and you'd probably end up naming it the JSON LD data model. It seems neither here nor there, and like it's not that big of a deal to have it there. It sounds like the big complaint is that the text simply doesn't say the JSON LD data model is based upon the RDF data model, which it is, and I consider this largely an editorial change. I don't think it's a big deal, and I don't think anyone was actually ever trying to hide that.
Yeah,
actually, I'm not really understanding what we are discussing in detail now. Are we now discussing editorial changes, or are there some technical issues which we are trying to resolve at the moment?
Let me put a more concrete proposal down that I think might be easier to understand from the for at least the JSON LD people here that have been involved for a while. And then, Peter, correct me if this doesn't work for you. I think what we could do is say just point blank in the very first part of Appendix A, the JSON LD data model is based on the RDF data model. There exist these N changes in order to make the RDF data model compatible with JSON. Change one is native numbers. Change two is native support of lists. I forget what else. We have a couple of them. Predicates in predicates as blank nodes. So those three changes, those are the extensions to the base RDS data model that the JSON-LD data model makes. But I think if we phrase it like that, then it's very clear that the JSON-LD data model is built on top of the RDF data model. I'm hoping that makes Peter feel like we're not throwing RDF under the bus, because I don't think that was the intent for the group. We're trying to make it easier to understand for a certain group of developers. And that change would largely be, I think, the intent. That was always the intent, but hopefully the intent is clearer by making that statement just in the beginning. Did that make sense in general to the group? And Peter, would that change work for you? Is that the gist of what you're trying to get us to change?
Not really. Okay. So I mean, okay, let's put it fairly bluntly. There's really a sense of bad faith here, perhaps on both sides. Maybe naivete on one side and bad faith on the other side. Recovering from this situation requires, in my opinion, one of two things, or at least one of two things. One would be complete technical alignment, and the other would be trumpeting out in non-technical space the alignment. If the changes to JSON-LD amount to papering over the fig leafing the differences by saying based upon in Appendix A, and grudgingly sprinkling a few, well, it might also be RDF in the beginning of the document, I don't think that's sufficient.
In the beginning of the document, but we're talking about the change to the data model. This is a normative section, and in the normative section, we would say the JSON-LD data model is based on the RDF data model.
And therein lies the rub. Based upon is this non-actionable relationship.
Well, how about extension of? So, I mean, if we don't say extension of, then Peter, I'm wondering how you think we might be able to deal with things like the JSON number representation, which is not directly correlate to an XSD type. That's the principal issue that I'm trying to figure out.
Actually, it does. So now we have an issue with what really is JSON. What really is JSON. So there's actually multiple places that one can come up with a definition of JSON. You guys point to one. There's a different one at JSON.org. The one at JSON.org points to this ECMA document, which is the definition, I believe, of JavaScript. In that definition, it says bluntly that JavaScript has IEEE floating point numbers minus nans and ints. Right. So if one went that way, JSON-LD, JSON numbers are eminently compatible with XSD colon double. Now, what's the reality? That's the spec, or a spec. Right? And, of course, the other one, the one that you guys point to, is a different spec. It also really only mentions syntax and doesn't really say what numbers mean. So, in a certain sense, in a certain very, very strong sense, JSON numbers are IEEE doubles, accept no substitutes, and therefore are completely compatible with XSD doubles. Okay, we're done.
No, we're not done because that's not the reality. That's the problem.
So the reality is that everybody who implements this deviates from the spec. Now, why hasn't the spec been changed? I have no idea. They deviate from the spec in a very, very weird way, and in a very implementation-dependent way, as far as I can tell. And they either deviate by saying if it's representable as an integer, it's an integer. If it's not, it's a double. Or if it looks like an integer, it's an integer. If not, it's a double. Right. Now, the first one is kind of weird because it allows, 1.0 to be an integer. The second one is actually what many programming languages do. So 1 is an integer and 1.0 is a double. Now, again, even if you do this one, so 1 is an integer and 1.0 is a double, you can be completely compatible with RDF and XML schema data types in exactly the same way that languages like Turtle could be. Turtle might even be. So you say that 1 is a JSON integer, 1.0 is a JSON double, 1 is a short form for double quote 1 double quote hat at XSD colon integer, and the other one is for double. And then essentially you say, well, look, implementations can, integer is unbounded, implementations don't have to handle it. Exactly the same way as many of the RDF surface syntaxes say, that essentially, look, some implementations don't implement, a Google. There's no way that an implementation will accept a Google as an integer, right? First of all, they can't even read a Google as an integer. I don't think anybody can read a Google as an integer. And if they could read a Google as an integer, a Googleplex was completely impossible. A Google is, 100 to the hundredth or something like that, and a Googleplex is 100 to that. I forget. Anyway, incredibly large numbers. Nobody in their right mind expects any implementation to be able to handle these numbers, but nobody cares. And you can be compatible and precisely that way. What other issues do you have? Well, again, you've got language tag strings, which essentially you can state are essentially shorthand for the longer version. You've got string literals, which are shorthand for XSD string.
Hold on. Those are actually not issues for us. The other issue, there are three issues, really. One of them is the number one, and I think we're going to have to really dig into the spec what you're saying, I feel we've discussed before and found a problem with the way the interpretation is in the spec, because numbers are supposed to be unbounded. And so if we say that, they are actually bounded, like a JSON number is an XSD integer, the value spaces are completely different. There's no value space. Say again?
Value spaces are subsets. You can just state that JSON LV implementations may choose to restrict integers to the native range of JSON. But again, now the trouble is, what do you point to, right? There's nothing to point to. But essentially, you could say JSON LV numbers may choose to restrict integers to the native integers on their
The implementation. Yeah. Okay. So let's say that's resolved, because we've got close enough to go off and try to see if we can really lock that down. So let's say that's resolved. The next two issues are the BNSS properties and the native list support in JSON.
BNSS properties I'm quite willing to give you, and I think that if I give it to you, it will go through. And now we have lists. Again,
mm-hmm.
So how do we handle lists? Well, a way.
Peter, can you clarify what you meant by it'll go through? You mean that RDF working group will adopt it?
Yes, there's been agitation. I mean, I think it could happen, right? If not, then you essentially say with this one exception, and the exception.
And what do we call if we make that exception? What do we call it? Do we call it the JSON LD data model?
No, you just say it's an extension of RDF concept, of RDF graphs, and you've been calling extended RDF graphs. That's what's done in the literature.
Extended RDF graphs. But each, but there's no, well, so the problem with extended RDF graphs is it's kind of ambiguous. Which extensions are you talking about, right?
So you define it in your document, and whenever you say it in your document, you point to it. Now, it's not an ideal situation. I agree.
Why don't we just call it the JSON-LD data model? Wouldn't it be very specific in that case?
Yeah.
We'll just
now
the
we're
JSON-LD
getting to the other half.
Sorry, I didn't hear either one of you.
Okay, now we're getting to the other half of the issue, but that's not good now.
Okay. Okay, so whatever. Let's say it's an extended RDF graph, I guess, with one extension, which is BNOS's properties, if it doesn't go through the RDF working group. Okay, and then the other thing is native list supports. The JSON data model has native lists. RDF doesn't necessarily. Peter.
All you need to say, all you need to say is that lists are shorthand for the appropriate RDF collection, and you can even point to a definition of the transform. It's in Turtle.
That's not always true, though, in JSON-LD. It's not always. It's only if the type of the property is set to be a list, will it automatically convert. Otherwise, it's assumed to be a set.
Yeah, but there isn't a syntax level. And let's not get hung up on sort of what the array representation of elements means. I think, for all practical purposes, JSON-LD lists are the same. They are the same as RDF lists. It's just that syntactically, as with Turtle, there is a way to represent them using the native facilities of JSON with the appropriate context or enclosing objects. So I don't really see we have any issue with lists, because the lists we have are identical to RDF lists. It's just that we are able to use a notation, as is Turtle, that makes them more convenient to use natively.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any point in ever suggesting that they're different things.
Manu, it sounds like you were bringing up the difference between a set and a list, that the same kind of syntax is used, but in one case the ordering should be ignored, and in the other case the ordering should not be ignored.
That's correct.
Is that what you were bringing up?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Correct.
So that can certainly be done, can be done in RDF as well. I don't know of a standard. Well, anyway, it certainly can be done in RDF as well. Just saying that yes, we've produced a list here, but the ordering is unimportant. Logically set.
No facilities in RDF for that whatsoever. RDF.
No standardized facility for doing that. But semantically, you can. It's certainly possible to do that.
It's not unlike RDFA, where you can have whether you use an ordered or unordered list is inconsequential. The items that are in there are unordered unless you use a convention of using at list, in which case we're saying it's ordered. I think that what we're doing with JSON-LD is pretty much identical to that. And there's no question that that's not exactly the RDF data model.
There is no, sorry, I didn't know if you used a double negative there or not. There is no question that is
the case that the I don't think it's disputed that the RDFA usage there directly corresponds to the RDF data model.
Okay.
And consequently, I don't believe the JSON-LD case varies from that either.
Okay.
No, that's not the intent either. I mean, we represent RDF lists, and we represent repeated statements as what we call sets here. that's the intent. Not to model some kind of another way of repeating things, representing a set type.
Okay, so you're agreeing with Greg Nicholas, is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
I think we're all in agreement on this.
Okay. All right. So if there are a number of ifs. If we find no issue with the with representing JSON numbers as XSD, we can do some sort of alignment there. I'm waving my hands in the air because the specific spec text is going to be very important how we do that. And we agree that the intent was not to deviate from what you can model. As far as lists are concerned, the intent was not to deviate from what you can model in RDF. So if you want an ordered list, you can do that in RDF. If you wanted to do repeated statements, you can do that in RDF. The way that you do that in JSON-LD is that you use a different tweak on the syntax, but it can be modeled in RDF just fine, and therefore the RDF data model is fine for that, and the same parallel is made between JSON-LD and RDFA. So we have alignment on lists. We have alignment on numbers. We're hoping that the RDF working group adopts blank nodes as properties. If they do not, we can add that to the end. We can add that as an extension to the RDF data model. And with those three items covered, we should be able to align one-to-one with the RDF with RDF graphs and RDF data sets. Is there anyone in the group that disagrees with that at this point?
I don't think there's anyone who's disagreeing, but isn't that what we are doing right now already? I mean, we just call it JSON-LD data model, but we just, it's the same, basically.
Well, that's what I was saying. It feels, a lot of it feels editorial. I think we just need to change the language around because I think it, some people in the RDF working group have found it offensive, but that was not our intent.
I think that the use of the term JSON-LD data model creates a false sense that it is something distinct, when I think that we've always felt that it really is the RDF data model, but have not just come out and stated that. So, I mean, I definitely support completely aligning the JSON-LD model with the RDF model to the point of not talking about the JSON-LD data model. I think JSON-LD's data model might serve as a form of indirection, and by then pointing to a definition that basically says it's the RDF data model.
Right. I don't know if
but
an IRC. You can just define the JSON-LD data model as an extended RDF graph with and list the extensions. And then we can just use
that. It would be an RDF data set, of course, but yeah.
But the only reason we have that JSON-LD data model in the spec is because the RDF working group asks us to include that. That's really the only reason why it's in there.
Well, I don't think we have to get rid of the term. I'm just saying we be clear about the definition that it is an RDF, it's an extended RDF data set, and these are the extensions. And if we just change the language there, we won't have removed the term. We can still use the term. It's just clear where it's coming from, and I think that'll resolve the issue.
I think I agree with Greg on a slight problematic thing I can see would be if the term became so ingrained that it took on a life on its own, so that I think the fears from the RDF working group has been that this is something standing for itself, that it's intended
to
set a superset formally.
We just name the section the data model, and then say the RDF data model, and then just strike JSON-LD data model, and we will talk about it as the data model in the spec.
I think that does it.
Okay.
Fine.
Yes.
Okay.
Good idea.
Okay. All right. So Peter, David, Booth, does that. We're going to try some spec text. It's probably not going to be right the first time through, but I think we've got general agreement to try this. And then we can see if that that works for you, Peter, and David Booth.
That sounds like an excellent way forward.
Okay. All right. So
this is David.
Okay.
That sounds like a great idea to me, too. I know when I read it, I certainly got the impression that the JSON-LD data model was distinct from the RDF data model. So this would definitely fix that. I think.
Okay. All right.
Idea.
So. Okay. All right. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to try it, and then we're probably going to have to go back and forth a few more times to, you know, hammer out a couple of sentences here and there that are not right. But I think that's good. Okay. Do we need to do a proposal on this? I don't really know what the proposal. Let's do some spec text first, and then the proposal that we do later on will be to adopt the spec changes. And then what we'll do is we'll have both Peter and David Booth review it to make sure that they're fine with the changes. And then if they are, then we'll go ahead and do a proposal to adopt those. Does that sound like a good plan going forward?
Sounds good.
That sounds great to me.
Okay, good. Great. Thank you very much for joining us on the call, Peter and David. It definitely helps to kind of talk these things out on the phone versus over the mailing list. Okay. Anything else on this topic before? Sorry, go ahead.
This is David. I did want to make one other comment. My suggestion about scolemization was really motivated only to achieve alignment with RDF. So it isn't the only way alignment can be achieved. And this approach to alignment is definitely a preferable approach. So that scolemization suggestion may be rendered completely moot by this approach.
Yeah.
One little thing is that with respect to blank nodes as predicates, I think it is important to be clear in the spec about what happens if the RDF working group does not adopt that.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be a big thing, but just so that it is so that two different processors that are processing the same JSON document will predictably get the same RDF if they are following the same spec.
Yeah, and I agree with you that we want some form of interoperability in that case. I think the question is how best to achieve that interoperability. Is it scolemization? Is it just expressing it as a blank node and then the system reading it in will figure it out? You know, Andy's pushing back on the scolemization thing.
Right.
We need to figure it out.
Yeah, and I'm not. Like I say, I'm not married to the scolemization idea. The overall goal was just to get that predictability.
Yeah.
If there is a good chance that the RDF will adopt the blank nodes as predicates at some point, then that is definitely the preferable route.
Yep.
Better than
I absolutely agree. The reason that we have these two changes in there right now is because we didn't think that the RDF working group would adopt blank nodes as graph labels or blank nodes as predicates. So that's why it's in the spec. If we can align, then that's great.
Yeah. So I would suggest have some little piece of hedge language in there that says something like, if the working group does not adopt blank nodes as predicates, then something. Like whether that something is that the triple gets dropped or the triple gets scolemized, but something predictable needs to happen so that we have that predictability.
I think right now we say that the triple gets dropped.
Well, I think at the moment it's ambiguous. It's up to the processor, and I want to get rid of that ambiguity.
I think it's very explicit in the JSON-LD API.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong about
RDF
that.
Algorithm. Yeah, we'll have to go back and see, but I thought we made it. Actually, you know what? That I might be wrong. I forget where we stand on the API at this point. Marcus, do you know?
It's currently exposed of every other triple, and the consuming side is then free to do what it wants with that triple.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that's what Andy said his preference was.
Yeah.
So, David, I guess in general,
yeah, we'll,
David, we need to
make a suggestion
on
the list. Yep.
Okay.
Great. I think this is a great approach, though, in general. So.
Okay. All right. Good. Good. All right. Thanks again, Peter and David. It's appreciated. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up is issue 257, blank node identifiers for data types. Here we go. And here's a link to the issue. Marcus, is this you who brought this issue up?
Yeah. Basically, there is a kind of an inconsistency in this fact because you can't use a bnode as data type if you do it in the document directly, but you can do if you do it via the context. And in one case, we throw an error, whereas in the other case, it kind of flips to. I think blank nodes as data types were never really actually intended. So the proposal is simply to, well, disallow the other case where it currently flips through.
What's the proposal? There are two proposals.
The proposal is first one to not support blank nodes as data types, and the second one is well, to change the algorithm to throw an error in the second case as well.
Does anyone have preferences on these two proposals?
Well, I think the proposals support each other.
Oh sorry.
And I think this came about because my processor, of course, tried to make sense of everything. So by creating a literal with a blank node data type, it raised an error down in my literal library, and therefore I couldn't do that. And it became clear that this, to me anyway, that this was just an oversight, and it was allowed through not through design, but simply as a consequence of allowing bnodes in most of those positions syntactically.
Dave Longley, you're the one that's kind of saying that you're concerned about these two proposals.
Right.
Do you mind to elaborate?
Yeah, my only complaint was that we're, again, deviating from a sort of a generalization that we could just apply everywhere. I don't feel that strongly about it. It just seemed like, you know, why not just be general everywhere? Why make special exceptions? But it is fine. And we can revisit later if there's a use case, but it just seems simpler to keep everything, just keep the generalization everywhere.
Yeah, I think that would be a reasonable generalization for the RDF concepts to apply. And if that was the case, then it would be a perfectly reasonable thing for us to do. Otherwise, I think we're getting into this point of just creating differences that are not there, that no one is mandating, simply because it falls out of a consistency of approach in transforming documents. I don't know that there's any other. I don't think notation 3 allows blank node data types, where it does allow, for instance, blank node properties.
I would prefer to keep the generalization as well, but I just don't think it makes sense to fight for that now because we have enough other fights already.
We can always do it in the future. Is that a true statement?
Yeah, I mean, if we disallow it now, we can always allow it later, but...
We don't have any use cases for this feature? Like, has anyone ever seen a blank node data type or used one?
It doesn't make that much sense, and it doesn't fall out of JSON, because if you don't if you would use a blank node data type, you just don't specify a data type at all, for example. Whereas in with predicate, for example, you sometimes have to use them to keep a subtree, even though if you're just interested in some leaf of that subtree, for example.
Okay. Well, I mean, it seems like if you wanted to just have types in your local document, that would be the use case. And you could describe that type later in some other node with other properties.
Yeah, I guess the concern is I don't know if we've ever seen that in the wild, seen a use. I mean, yes, that is a valid use case. It's just who needs to do that? Right. I mean, I can't think of it would be someone that needs to create their own data types for their application and keep the data types within a document and not connect them to the outside world. It's like really specific sort of data, you know, it's a really specific sort of use case. I mean, like, I could maybe see a linguist that's creating a new language needing that, but, you know, one of the uses of data types is that they're kind of globally known, or at least known at the organization or the application level, not that they're known at the document level. I think they become fairly useless when you have data types at the document level. I think if we were to look at this as what are the negatives of not including this feature now, I don't think that there are very many negatives that we care about. Meaning it's not generalized. That's the negative, is that the solution isn't generalized. If we generalize it, then we have a fight with the RDF working group to look forward to. We have to implement it in our processors, which may or may not be easy to do. It's probably not that hard to do. And it's more spec text that we have to think about, you know, writing at this point. And we don't have any real use cases for it. Anybody have any strong feelings about this particular feature, set of proposals? Basically, if not, then we could go forward with Marcus's proposals. Okay, let's go ahead and try to put Marcus's proposals forward and see what folks think. Proposal one is do not support blank nodes as data types. Oh, and Nicholas had to go. I was looking for his vote. Okay, that's resolved. And the second proposal is raise an error if a blank node typed literal is detected. Okay, that's resolved. Marcus, does that close out this issue?
Yes, it does. I don't think there is any test case anyway, so I think it's just those two lines in the spec that have to be changed.
Well, no, there is a test case that fails, that I fail right now because of this. It's a compact case. I have to look at it.
Okay, well,
I put it up on.
Okay, well, let's take the test case, dealing with the test case offline. It should be fairly, I mean, the changes to the test are fairly straightforward, Greg. Is that correct, based on these resolutions?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's expand 049.
Okay. Okay, let's deal with that offline.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Next on the agenda, anything else on this before we move forward? Okay, next up is the issue 264, JSON LD URLD referencer feature. I think the core of this issue was that a while ago we had a discussion about loading remote contexts and how we needed to have something in the API that would be able to tell whether or not the specific use case was we needed to have something in the API that would be able to tell whether or not something was loaded over an HTTP or an HTTPS connection. Because some applications are sensitive to how remote documents are loaded. We also wanted this mechanism to be there to provide a caching mechanism if developers wanted it. And I think the intent was to make this feature generalized, but the way that it ended up being implemented in the spec wasn't necessarily generalized. So Dave Longley raised the point that we wanted to have something generalized, and he's proposing a spec text to make this a generalized feature of the API. Any thoughts on this particular generalization?
So we basically treat it as a bug fix.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yep. Okay. Let's see. Then I think the proposal, Dave Longley has a fairly long proposal in there. Dave, would you prefer to do that long proposal, or do you want to just say generalize the JSON LD remote context URL dereferencer to a general dereferencer?
Yeah, that's fine. We can just generalize, and then whoever makes the changes can just reference this issue for some of the more specific stuff. And if possible, I missed something in the proposal too, so let's just have a general one.
Okay, so generalize the load context callback feature into
a load document callback.
Document callback.
And use it for loading both remote contexts and remote documents when necessary.
Okay, there's the proposal.
I believe I also had a couple of notes in that issue about some clarifications we might need to make for when to use the HTTP link header and when not to. So,
okay.
I think the issue is essentially when you specify the HTTP link header, do you have to specify application/LD+JSON as the content type, or can you specify application/JSON? And if you can do the latter, we need to talk about how to prevent circular referencing. Well, or not necessarily circular referencing, but you could just keep getting more and more contexts, and you don't know what to do with them.
So I thought we said that if you go out to a context. If you're specifically fetching a context that you don't follow the other, you don't follow that link header, you just stop at one.
Well,
one
what
level
we
deep.
Said was, I think what we said was, if the MIME type is application LD plus JSON, then you must not fetch something else. However, we don't say that you can't specify the link header as application/JSON. There might be people out there that have documents that also double as contexts, at where this might be an issue, and we might we should probably just say something about it.
So you're proposing that we say if you're loading a context, it doesn't matter what the MIME type is, don't follow the link header in that context.
We could say that, but that actually might be really difficult to do because the document loader might not know what you're trying to do, whether or not you're loading a remote context or a remote document. We might instead just want to say if you specify the link header, you have to do LB.
Sorry, what was the last sentence?
If you're specifying an HTTP link header, the content type that you must request the context with is application LD plus JSON. Because that will inform any document callback that you're requesting application LD plus JSON, so you should not follow any links.
So the callback, what should the callback do?
The callback should give in a URL and go out and fetch the document. And if the document has an HTTP link header in it, the link header must have application LD plus JSON. If it doesn't, it's ignored. Otherwise, it follows the link header and gets the remote context. And then it returns the document and the context it fetched, where the context could be null if there was no link header. So that's what comes back as the future value.
Won't they? You're saying that the link header has to be application LD plus JSON. The document that they actually go out and fetch could just be a JSON document.
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm saying that if you encounter an HTTP link header that has application slash JSON, it's invalid.
What do you mean by a link header that has that MIME type? The document which it's linked to, which is referenced, or the document which has that link header in its headers?
Let me bring up what we look at the spec for what a link header looks like. Hang on, I'm trying to find the link header.
So you mean the type parameter of the link header?
Yeah, the type parameter.
Oh, but that doesn't really tell you much because that's just a hint. I mean, you can even ignore that.
Well, if you can ignore that, then we need to talk about, we need to tell implementations what to do. We need to tell them if there's a link header, you have to request that it's application slash LD plus JSON.
I think the important thing is what the content type is. And if the content type is application LD plus JSON, then we ignore the link header. And we
say what I'm saying is that's problematic because what if you keep getting back content types that say application slash JSON, but you keep also getting link headers? You could follow the link header and get back application slash JSON and another link header.
Yeah, but we have two cases here. So one is you're trying to dereference a document, and one is you're trying to get to the context. If you're trying to get the document, you might get back the document plus the link header, basically. If you're trying to dereference a context, then you would get back an application slash LD plus JSON, and you wouldn't get back a link header.
That's not known, though.
Sorry?
You don't know that for sure. Someone could specify just application slash JSON for the context that they want to use. Their server might not do LD plus JSON.
And you would like to interpret that nevertheless as a context, even if it's not typed as a context.
I don't have a strong preference on what we do, other than we must tell implementations what they need to do, because it's not clear right now.
Yeah, I agree. I'm trying to understand like how to do that, basically. Do we need a flag or something to tell the callback, well, what it should look for, or can we figure that out?
We could either provide a flag to the callback, or we could just say that the callback should only follow one link header. And then, so if you're fetching, that way the callback doesn't have to know anything about it.
Okay, I think that's where we kind of talk past each other, because I think the callback doesn't follow any link header by its own. It just returns the link of that link header, doesn't it?
Well, then are you saying that you would make the processor would use the callback again to fetch the link header, and then the processor has to know about it?
Yes.
But that means that we have to return back the link header information in the result of the callback.
Right. Isn't that what you proposed in that issue, so that we extend that?
No, I proposed that you just return back the document and the context, and the processor doesn't have to put a link header in there. It seems like you're not separating concerns. And in fact, your callback might not go off onto the network. It might do something entirely different as a completely custom callback.
Yeah, but we have that currently it's called that remote context dictionary, which is used to return the result of that callback.
Right, and I was proposing to change it to remote document, and it has two properties, document and context. And the context would already be fetched if there was a link.
Oh, it's already fetched another link.
Yes. And then the processor decides based on what algorithm it's in, whether or not it uses that context.
Wouldn't it be much simpler if we just return the link of that context and the processor then just invokes the callback again?
That's an option. If you want to make it a link to the context, and so it's a context URL instead of a context.
So I'm hearing that we don't really have a preference between these various solutions.
Right, that's what I was saying. We should go with the general proposal that we went with, because we can work out these details. Okay.
Yeah, okay, we can work in it in the issue tracker, but I'm not really sure I understand or how it's supposed to work at the moment. But yeah, let's put that back to the issue tracker.
Okay. Okay. We are at the end of the call.
Before we jump off, I was just going to paste some text in there since Peter earlier in the call had some complaints about something we said in the introduction, and I was just going to throw this out there to see if people would be okay with this minor change. He was complaining about some text in the introduction that we had debated previously that talked about being clear that you don't have to understand RDF, and he seemed to be he seemed to be offended with the notion that we didn't say JSON-LD was designed to be used both as idiomatic JSON and RDF in the same sentence. So he sort of got the back of the bus idea. And this would be a minor change that maybe would fix that problem in the intro.
Right.
And remove some of the animus.
Yeah. I think the text is better, and I also think that it'd be more confusing to people just that have no idea about the historical discussion. And they're going to kind of read this and wonder why we're like, you know, you can use it. I mean, effectively what you get from this is like, you don't need to understand RDF, but you can use it with RDF. So if you want to use RDF tools, you can use it with that. but at the same time, you don't need to understand RDF at all. Like, it's this weird, like, back and forth that, that we're doing. And I think that the current text has that same problem. So I think the text that you're proposing is better than what we have in the document right now, but I think that we're also, it's kind of a confusing paragraph. So I guess the underlying, I would be fine with updating the text with what you have there. I don't know if it makes it more or less confusing. I don't think it makes it any more confusing than it currently is. Actually, it might make it slightly more confusing than it currently is.
Yeah, I think that maybe if we step away from specific words to what we feel it is we want to communicate in there. And I think the perception is that we have really been keeping RDF at hands distance or further away. So you don't really need to, never mind what's behind the curtain. Peter's feeling, as I understand it, is that by not really saying that JSON-LD is RDF, that is the throwing RDF under the bus. I think, though, that the point is that we can say that it's sort of like saying, PostScript is not based upon mathematical principles. It certainly is, and that's partly why PostScript has been such a successful language, at least in my opinion, is that it has such a strong theoretical basis. JSON-LD is based on RDF and has a very strong theoretical basis, but I don't need to understand the math of kerning to use PostScript. Neither do I need to understand the rules of inference to be able to use JSON-LD. That's the point, is that it is RDF, but it is done in such a way that you can really use it as JSON if you follow some simple rules and be completely conforming with the data model.
Yep, I agree wholeheartedly with that statement.
Yep.
So I think the challenge is how do we say that in such a way that it doesn't look like it was a complete committee compromise in an introduction, which I think is probably the most important part of the document.
I took a read back through the spec, and I hadn't done it in a while since we've added all this input from various RDF working group comments and last call two comments, and the document, it does jump around quite a bit now. I think that Pat Hayes' read on it is fairly accurate. We come out of left field with new terminology like blank nodes. We like hit them with blank nodes very early on in the document, and that's something we used to not do. And I think that was put in there because it was from a Brevier comment. But I think we're going to have to make another pass through at least the syntax document and clean it up a bit. Because we're way more heavy-handed than we used to be with terminology that they don't really need to understand until way later in the document.
We need to figure out how to be able to do this collaboratively without sort of taking all this time to do it.
Right.
Because otherwise, the burden falls too much on one person, or it gets. We're not coming up with what we feel is a consensus view on it. So maybe we could have some other call where we could hash through going through perhaps some specific proposals for changes to parts of the document.
Yeah, since we're so late in the game here, right, we're getting ready to go into candidate rec, what I was going to do is I was going to try and lift out some of the offending sentences. Meaning like, if, for example, in section 2 or section 3, we start talking about blank nodes right off the bat, lift the sentence out and see if there's somewhere else in the document we can kind of move the sentence to. So it's not necessarily removing text that's there, it's just moving it around so that we're not as aggressive with some of the more advanced concepts early in the document. And Clay is saying, why are we saying there's no need to understand RDF at all? We want to mention RDF, but we don't want to make people think that they need to understand RDF in order to use this stuff. We don't want somebody
I
need to go off and go ahead.
If we describe it as being the theoretical basis for this, then I think that's enough, because it's clear that's what it is. But how many people actually go and look at the documents that support the underlying theory of anything? Only when they really read an intellectual barrier, and that's the only way to try to resolve it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. What I'm hearing is that we're all pretty much aligned on what we want to convey. It's just the specific text that's difficult to come up with. But I think we have a better idea of how we want to kind of align this stuff now. Okay. All right. Anything else? I would imagine, Greg, that we are going to end up spending time on, maybe the editors can get together and hash these, authors and editors need to get together and hash this stuff out. I have a feeling that we're just going to end up using telecon time for it anyway. Because that's, the time that works best for us. It's either telecon.
Well,
normal telecon or some other point.
Maybe we can use GitHub somehow and create some issues or sub-issues or something for the different sections where we can sort of nominate at least a direction, if not replacement spec text, rather than just trying to operate in the document directly.
What about an Etherpad with the chunks that we're trying to modify heavily?
That's probably even better. Yeah.
Okay. So,
by the way, one minor nit that I have every time I touch the documents is they end up getting broken as XML, so it's very common for ending tags to be wrong or misplaced, which can create a problem with toolchain. So I just want to plea that when we're making changes to the documents, let's make sure that they are structurally sound as XML. So close the tags.
I'm trying to think of I'm trying to think of a tool chain we could use to ensure that.
Well, I use TextMate when I'm editing it as HTML, but I do I validate the document as XML, and it points me to these problems, and I go through in the course of 10 minutes, I find and fix the various problems. But if we do it along the way, it becomes a lot less burdensome. So I don't know what other people are editing it with, but it's usually either missing or a wrong. Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm saying that jokingly. I usually use Getit and Vi, and it depends on which machine I'm on and how I'm feeling. So unfortunately,
yeah. If you do an XML parse, it'll find the things for you pretty easily.
Okay.
Coming from one of the proponents of XHTML, I think you'd be sympathetic to that.
I think my tune has changed in the last couple of years. Anyway, anything else before we go, since we're past time? Okay. Thanks, everyone, for the call. Much appreciated, and we'll chat again next week. All right, bye.
Great, bye.
Bye. Bye.